everyone. Welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, a podcast where every week myself, Adrian, and Matt talk about the things in pop culture that people say matter and ask the question, but why though? Before we get started, make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen. It helps everybody find us. And if you want to support us a little bit more, make sure you head on over to our Patreon, patreon.com/butwhythoughPC. And as always, enjoy the show. Welcome back to But Why Though, the podcast, and today we are talking about John Williams. As always, I'm your host, Kate, and we're with Adrian.
Kate, how's it going?
And Matt.
Hello.
And I am sick today, so my voice is a little gravelly and like a smoker, but we want to say a special thanks to Charles, one of our patrons, who requested this episode with his patronage. Thank you so much, Charles. I know Adrian was looking forward to doing a John Williams episode.
Yeah, we've actually gone back and forth on which one we should do first, Hans Zimmer or John Williams. So I'm glad Charles picked it, and we got to do John Williams first.
I still voted for Hans Zimmer, but we're glad we do John Williams. Thank you, Charles, for all the support.
Thanks, yes, Charles.
Thank you so much, Charles. So I figured the best way for us to start this is just to ask, what is your favorite John Williams score? It can be a soundtrack or a single song.
I can start first. I think Duel of Fates is my favorite, just because it's like on like my workout playlist. It's just so good. It's like the best part of that first movie, and the rest of it can be terrible, but that song will like stand the test of time when it comes to Star Wars scores. Yeah.
This is easy, the Jurassic Park theme, and there's no other one.
I hate you too, because like,
yeah, those are top two, right? Like,
oh, like my head is like, I want to pick one or the other, but I just watched three different YouTube videos where he was conducting the Jurassic Park theme song. But yeah, I'm actually gonna say Jurassic Park just because of the Doors, but Duel of the Fates is like, I can't, like, they're right there.
Yeah,
because there's that entire operatic section in Duel of the Fates that he puts into it with the orchestra, and it's superb.
Yeah, I agree.
So this is going to be a shorter episode, only because John Williams is a super private person. But on top of that, a lot we're going to be doing is we're going to be talking about the things that he's made and how he's changed pretty much the face of film scores and music in general. So let's start off with our brief history. John Towner Williams, or John Williams, was born in the Flushing section of Queens, New York on February 8th, 1932. What I have learned is be born in New York if you want to do anything to greatly affect culture, apparently.
Yeah, right? Like, almost all the people that we've covered in the last few weeks have all been from New York. Yep. It's crazy.
Well, this is also, like, they're also very old people who, like, true. New York, I mean, we're still talking, we have airplanes now, but I mean, travel, internet, all this like fast communication and things of being in like the largest city in the country definitely helps.
Yeah, especially like in the media, avenue for sure.
Yeah.
So the cool thing though is that as much as New York is that type of hub, in 1948, he ended up moving with his family to Los Angeles, California, and he ended up attending the University of California at Los Angeles for a short time before he went to go serve in the U.S. Air Force in 1951. After 3 years of service, he returned to New York City where he worked as a jazz pianist, and he also attended Juilliard. And there he was studying with the famed teacher Rosina Levine, and he wanted to be a concert pianist. That was his goal. I would say he far surpassed just being a concert pianist.
Yeah, I agree, because I don't even know who Raza, whoever you just said is. And then she's supposed to be super famous. But so I think he chose the right path there.
So after returning to Los Angeles, Williams became a movie studio musician, and some of his first works was when he was a pianist on the film Some Like It Hot in 1959 and To Kill a Mockingbird in 1962. I have seen both of those movies and like them a whole bunch. He ended up working with Henry Mancini, and he also played piano on the theme for the television program Peter Gunn. After that, Williams was composing his own music for TV. And the shows that he touched were Wagon Train, Gilligan's Island, and Lost in Space. And then after that, Williams has worked regularly as a conductor. In 1980, he became the conductor of the Boston Pops Orchestra, and it was a position that he held until 1993 when he retired. And he still serves at the Laureate Conductor as the Laureate Conductor at Pops, and has also conducted for the London Symphony and popular concerts at the Hollywood Bowl. So he has a immense resume that I didn't put in the intro history, because we're going to get all into this when we look at our But Why Those, which you're going to shift into now. So the first But Why Though is dedication to the craft. I couldn't really figure out how else to put this other than that just like John Williams does everything in like to perfection. And as an example of that, when he was working on Close Encounters of the Third Kind with Steven Spielberg, he composed over 300 examples of five-note communication motif. And this is what the scientists used to communicate with the visiting spaceship, before Spielberg only chose one, which was then incorporated into the film's theme song. So he recorded 300 different versions of five notes to come to only one, which to me is insane, because that's a lot of work into something that, like, as a moviegoer or just as somebody who doesn't know music in that way, I'm like, oh, it's like five beeps. That's it.
Well, one, that's amazing. Two, I still believe Close Encounters is way better than E.T.
Oh, yeah. John Williams agrees with you, by the way. Fun fact, Close Encounters was his favorite film to score and his favorite Spielberg film to watch.
Other fun fact, E.T. is actually one of the highest, like, I believe it's critically rated films, while the lowest audience rated films, as really? Far as gaps. Yes.
So does he, like, own the other 299 fifth note communication motifs?
I would assume.
Like, he just, like, has them just ready to, like, put into something. I wonder if, like, he uses those other... Because that's, like, so many... That's so many things, right? Like, he has to put them somewhere and use them. I would want to use them. I wouldn't just want them, like, chilling on wherever he keeps his five-note communication motifs.
Yeah. So, you want to know what makes this even crazier? He composes by hand. So everything that he composes, he does not use synthesizers or computers.
I don't think they had that.
Well, no, as of 2015, because he's still working. So as of 2015, in the article that was written about him, he refused to kind of adapt with the time, you know, because he was a traditionalist. He would, when he composed, he was with his piano, with pencils and paper. And that was it. And this is beyond, like, Close Encounters or anything like that. We're talking, like, the most recent stuff he's done. He composed that by hand.
Well, I mean, I'm not surprised by that. He did it for 35, 40 years by hand. I don't see why he would all of a sudden change.
Well, yeah, no.
You're supposed to have boxes and just boxes and boxes and, like, just shells and notes.
That's the thing. Like, it's just, it's so much paper. And he did 300 composed variations of five beeps. By hand, and then had to keep track of all of them.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like, that's a lot of work. Like, that is, like, doing stuff by hand is a lot harder than doing it on computers. And so probably one of his biggest things, and I put this under dedication because this really transitioned, this really sets him apart from other composers at the time when he first started, is that he chose to use actual orchestras instead of the readied Hollywood ones. And there's nothing wrong with like a standing orchestra for a studio. But what he did was for the original New Hope soundtrack, he actually brought in the London Symphony Orchestra instead of the Hollywood Studio Orchestra. And that's kind of unheard of, really, or at the time it was, because all of his things, as much as they're film scores, they're not just background music. They are very much like a living piece of the film itself, and they are the action. And to do that, he needed to make sure that he had everybody at the ready and had a full orchestra. In many ways, he was writing concertos, not just a film soundtrack. And so one of the things that has set him apart is the dedication that he's had to making sure that every piece of music that he puts out is telling the story by itself while also telling the story with the film. Which there are some videos that remove John Williams. Like, if you watch Jaws without the Jaws theme, it's weird. It just doesn't land.
It's actually very bad. I've actually done it. Watched it.
Like, they have a lot of YouTube videos where they just pull out his stuff, and it just doesn't work. They did it for Duel of the Fates, too. It looks... It loses all the intensity without Duel of the Fates.
Yeah, it really does. Like, you can't really put anything else there and make that scene as good without that score. Even like the Owen Wilson wow isn't up to snuff.
I mean obviously the Duel of Fates one side, like, it's still like a fight and so you have something going on, but the Jaws one is to me the most notable one because the Jaws one just kind of, it is like, you're like, is this supposed to be scary or like what is even going on? It just loses everything that made the movie like one of the top movies of all time.
Yeah. I mean, and in my opinion too, like watching the Jurassic Park opener with like without the theme, it's not as magical. Like there is just something about the Jurassic Park theme that kind of just puts you in that place, and it has like a wonder within the theme itself that really builds into the movie. Which like I hear that song and I can picture it all in my head.
Yeah, and it's really not even like, even the big ones are always going to be the big ones, right? So like things like, you know, his stuff in Indiana Jones and Jaws and Star Wars and Harry Potter. But even when I think about other stuff he's done, like Saving Private Ryan or like The Patriot or even like Memoirs of a Geisha, like those are all scores that I distinctly remember. And the music isn't the biggest part of those movies, but without it, I think the movie is significantly less than. And that just shows like his dedication to doing big movies, but also doing, you know, those smaller movies that he's able to like land those.
Yeah.
You know, even 300. That's just, that number just blows my mind. Where did he put all of that?
Where did and he that's put like all the only that? That's the only factoid I have for like production stuff. I wouldn't be surprised if there are like 20 different versions of the Imperial March.
That's what I'm saying. Like all the stuff he's done. Like all, I mean, Memoirs of a Geisha has beautiful music. So like what were the variations he did in that one?
Yeah, and the next But Why though is actually his partnership with Steven Spielberg. So Steven Spielberg has directed 31 movies. John Williams has scored 28 of them.
What are the three that he did not?
He did not score The Color Purple, Bridge of Spies, or Ready Player One.
I feel like he made good choices.
Well, The Color Purple he didn't score because Quincy Jones is specialty. And then he was sick for Bridge of Spies. And then he didn't score Ready Player One because he was actually going to... He chose to score The Post, which was going through production at the same time, which is also a Steven Spielberg movie. So he scored The Post instead of doing Ready Player One. But those are the only three that he's done. And in the ones he couldn't do, he recommended people to take over. And then So, like, beyond all this work that he's done with Steven Spielberg, which actually makes me wonder, like, I love Steven Spielberg, and I think he's a great director, but I wonder how much of, like, the impact that his movies have is actually because of this partnership and because of the music that's in them.
Well, yeah, I mean, we said it, right? Like, without that Jaws score, what do we have there?
Yeah.
But this kind of terribly animatronic, you know, thing that broke a bunch. Like, that score is Jaws. Like, when you think of Jaws, you think of the score first, I think, anyway.
Yeah.
And you do that when you're in the pool, you know, with, like, your younger siblings, like, trying to scare them under the water. Like, that's what's always in my head.
I'm trying to think of all the Spielberg films, because there are some bad ones, and obviously a lot of good ones, too, but... I think Jaws, I think without John Williams, that movie definitely fails. Jurassic Park, I think, as much as the score puts over top, I think the movie...
It's dinosaurs,
and, like, a lot of, like, we talked about when we did a Jurassic Park episodes of, like, a lot of the animations and, like, the animatronics and everything else that they did and the sound stuff they did outside of, like, the actual score, I think the movie still probably does pretty well.
E.T. doesn't do as well.
No,
I just don't like E.T. at all. I don't like the movie.
I don't think Schindler's List does as well either.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. I'm trying to think of, like, all of Spielberg's movies to, like, because there are definitely a few that, like, yeah, without the...
Amistad.
Raiders of the Lost Ark probably doesn't do as well. I mean, that,
no, I don't Indiana think that Jones, one does.
No.
Indiana Jones theme song is
yeah,
like, really
well,
big
yeah,
with the music.
Oh, that's true.
I don't think Indiana Jones does as well.
I don't think Star Wars would have done as well.
I don't think so either.
In all honesty, and just kind of like looking at like at this list, like I just think there are a lot where it just makes it like, I mean, I guess technically Hook didn't do well, but like I loved Hook. I loved Hook so much, but the music was a big part of that. I mean, there's just a lot that you can commend him on. And the cool thing is when you look, and we'll be looking at like the stuff that he scored before, but like there are films that are on opposite sides of genre.
Yeah.
And he's able to pretty much do it all. With that being said, moving into the other, another But Why Though, which are his iconic scores. So he's scored three of the longest franchises, Indiana Jones, Star Wars, and Jurassic Park. Like, these franchises are over 30 years old, and he's had a hand in all of them. And in fact, he's kind of, like, built the heart of them, if you want to say. Like we've mentioned, like, these theme songs are very much a piece of the movie that we take with us when we leave the theater, and have kind of, like, sat with popular culture. His film scores are also how he became known as a pioneer, really, within the film industry, because he was able to blend true classical music with movie soundtracks. There wasn't anything gimmicky about it. There wasn't anything that detracted from it. Like, these were full-on concertos written for a movie. And that was really, really big. And this eventually leads to him conducting live orchestras, live symphonies of his soundtracks from movies. And this actually, this type of orchestra performing a soundtrack live, this starts with John Williams. And now it's done, like, with so many different mediums, like the Zelda one. I think you went to the Zelda one, right, Adrian?
Yeah, with the video games live. We've been to the Game of Thrones one, and you're right, none of that happens without John Williams doing it first.
Because I think it was something like people were just requesting it because he was writing his own concertos. And he was like, well, I can do this. And he started performing them. And one of the biggest things that this has done is when you go and you talk to young musicians and young musicians specifically in classical music, like there aren't a lot of touchstones for new classical music in our culture. We don't talk about it that much. We don't know who top violinists are or top pianists are. We should, but we don't. Like, that's not at the forefront. But what John Williams did was he took that style of music and made it popular. So there was an article, and they talked to Travis Peterson, who is a trumpet player for the Utah Symphony, and he credited Jurassic Park as being his gateway into classical music. He was like, I picked up my instrument because of this. He's like, we did not have a cassette player, but I went into the store and I listened to the Jurassic Park theme nonstop. And there are a lot of other people out there who were able to get into something that, like, when you think about classical music, like, I love classical music, but you think of, like, something that's really elitist and really kind of gatekeepy in the way that it's like, oh, well, like, rich, like, super, super wealthy people have their, like, $300 violin that they play, and it takes, you know, all that stuff, and you feel detached from it. But what John Williams did was he made this something that is so ingrained in our lives that it actually opened the door for a lot of kids. Also, fun fact, the Superman theme song, you know how all Superman theme songs kind of sound the same? Well, the first one was done by John Williams. So we have John Williams to also thank for that.
Yeah, admittedly, I'm not a huge Superman fan, but I've found that out like a couple months ago. And like a trivia thing. I really had no idea. Yeah, if someone would ask, I probably would have said someone like Hans Zimmer or something like that. I didn't think that was him because it just didn't sound like, not that he has like a specific sound, but I was surprised by that. And then you're right, like all of the ones after that have that same rhythm. Mm. And even like the Star Wars movies that he's not even a part of anymore all use elements of his tracks.
Yeah, because they have to live in it. Like he's as much as like world building comes from the stories and the plots, I also think a part of the world is the music.
Yeah, so even on the ones he's not going to be in, like he's always going to get credited on them for the use of like the original themes, right? So
yeah,
so he didn't do Solo. I don't think he did Rogue One either. He didn't. But and all of the songs that are in there are based off his original themes.
Yeah. And then I don't believe he's coming back for 9.
I don't think so either, right?
Yeah, because he's over 80 years old now.
Yeah, he's super old. He's born in the 30s. I didn't even know people. That's crazy.
Yeah. So, into the numbers.
So, is Star Wars even actually any good, or is it just the music at this point?
I think they go hand in hand, to be honest. Yeah. I mean, I know when I first watched Rogue One, I thought the score wasn't as good.
Correct.
The Imperial March bugged me.
Yeah, I think this came up on my Facebook memories like today, actually, and I was like reading through our conversation about it. Like, it's just not the same, but The Last Jedi and Force Awakens have great music, but I think because of John Williams.
Yeah, I mean, and I would say, too, like, now, like, I've watched Rogue One, like, 6 or 7 times since it's been on Netflix. And now it doesn't bother me, but it was a feeling in the theater where I was like, oh no, this doesn't sound right.
Like, yeah, and it sounded off, like it, and I didn't even know John Williams. Right. Yeah, and I didn't even know John Williams was even on it, so I just knew something was off. And then to find out, like, oh well, that's why.
Because like it's not so much because it's still a great scene with what they have in it, and I love that movie to death. Like, it's one of my top movies. But I do very much think, just like Indiana Jones or just like any of the movies that he's put his music into, that's a vital part of them.
Yeah, it's like you said, it's a heartbeat of the movie. Might be everything, but it's definitely a solid heartbeat to it. Exactly.
Like, I think the new Jurassic World movies kind of suck because they have shitty soundtracks.
Yeah, it's terrible.
The second one definitely had terrible soundtrack. First one was like, okay, but they also did a lot of like,
Well, it was John Williams.
Yeah, it was like the first one they basically.
Like, the second scary one, music because of dinosaurs. Like, it gets away from like the classical. Yes.
It sounded generic.
That's what I'm saying. The first one kind of had it. The second one, they tried to do it, but they incorporated it terribly.
Yeah, because, like, and so I do think that's like a difference. Because, like, the second Jurassic World movie, it was generic music. Yes. It didn't stand out.
No.
It wasn't alive. And for me, for Star Wars, even though it felt different, like, they were very, like, the music was still really, really like central to a lot of the story, whereas it was just nothing in Jurassic World, and that was like, oh no.
Yeah,
because like for me, like there's like, he just, I already said it, but like there was just something in the way he composed the Jurassic Park soundtrack that made you feel like amazement and wonder and made it feel different, that you don't get that sort of like, you're leaving one area into a new area in the Jurassic World movies. It's just all kind of generic.
Dinosaur is coming, run away from the dinosaur.
And the T-Rex roar.
Yeah, basically, yeah.
No, I think Star Wars is still good without it, because you have to have all pieces, I guess. Like, okay, so I think this is what it is. Like, essentially, you can have a good movie, but if you have a good score, or like a great score on top of your good movie, that good movie is going to get better. And if you have a great movie with like great actors, great story, and a great score, we're going to remember that. And we're going to remember that like years after it's done.
Yeah, I think we even see that now when like movies say, not any that John Williams has done, obviously, but like Into the Spider-Verse, no spoilers, obviously, but like the movie is good, but man, I walked out of that movie remembering the score. Same thing with Black Panther. Black Panther is good, but I walked out remembering the score. Things like that. Like, the score is important. It's not the most important thing, but without it, you know, you get a little bit of a lackluster. You go lackluster to like really good to, you know, spectrums.
Because it's one of those, is like you have people who, and this is what like John Williams is really known for, is like it wasn't something that he just laid on top of the movie. Like he composed it as the movie was going to fit it. Like, you can't just throw it in there. Like, I think like Black Panther and Thor Ragnarok have my favorite like soundtracks of any like Marvel stuff, because it, every piece of them are like, you can't take that song and put it in another scene in another movie and have it be good, because it's made for that.
I beg to differ. You could totally put something from Thor Ragnarok in Infinity War and actually make it 10 times better, and that's still the most disappointing thing that I ever know of why we did not do Thor's entrance due to like his Ragnarok entrance.
Do you want to explain?
I don't even have to. Everybody at home knows what I'm talking about.
No, I agree with you. That definitely could have gone there. I just meant like, but that's with Thor. I just mean like there are very, very specific sounds that work for those movies, and they feel like they go hand in hand.
I'm also disappointed in both of you, because the main score that I think about in the last like year and a half would probably be Shape of Waters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I agree.
But that's more of a classical music than it is like with the retro.
Yeah,
so and like, that's also something like different than like the classical music vibe. And I think just by probably people have seen or have or going to see Into the Spider-Verse and Black Panther more than Shape of Water. If you haven't seen Shape of Water, what are you doing? Stop listening to our podcast right now and go watch Shape of Water.
Which apparently I found out that one of our writers has a Shape of Water t-shirt. And I'm like, why don't I have a Shape of Water t-shirt?
I've never seen one of those.
I have.
Matt.
It's just her humping fish man.
It's not hard to find on the internet. Just type it in. You can find anything.
Yeah, that's true. But yeah, no, I mean, I think that's also why Hans Zimmer is so important, because Hans Zimmer does a lot of these things too. And that's why a lot of his music is really, really iconic as well. But anyway... So, 127 film compositions. That's how many film compositions John Williams has that span from 1954 to today. 127. That's a crap ton. And that's just film. That's not the stuff that he's done for TV. Because I couldn't find a complete list of that. And then he's also written 15 concerti, which is the plural of concerto, which I found out thanks to Google. So yeah, like those are 15 full like orchestra things, concertis. It's really cool. Like, this man did not stop writing music ever.
Yeah, and that number is just going to go up even after he dies. Like, that number is still going to go up because people are still going to use the original themes and whatever the case is, because he's been a part of three of the longest running franchises ever.
Yeah, I mean, and honestly, like, after he passes, this is just what he has himself composed. This is not all of the credits that are like, we used a piece of your music. This is just his compositions.
By the way, when he passes, we'll find those other 299 things you're looking for, Adrian, because they'll probably be up for sale.
Probably, yeah.
Yep.
Unless he, like, I don't know, burns them all. I feel like he's like, no, this is mine.
Have you seen Relatives? They're going to sell them. Relatives are assholes.
Do you remember a J.R.R. Tolkien episode?
Relatives are great at milking whatever they can.
Oh, sadly.
Family's overrated.
Anyway. So beyond this, Williams also conducted the national... John Williams also conducted the National Symphony Orchestra, the U.S. Army Herald Trumpets, and the Joint Armed Forces Chorus, and the Choral Art Society of Washington, while performing his new arrangement of the Star-Spangled Banner for its 200th anniversary in 2014. Like, John Williams was so good that they told him, create a new arrangement of our national anthem for a 200th anniversary. Like, that's... this guy's pretty big. Just saying. He might matter. A little bit. He also composed the 1984, 1988, 1996, and 2002 concerti that were for the Olympics. So he also scored the Olympics.
Yeah, that's quite the range. Like... And that's from like multiple Olympics.
To Star Wars, to Jurassic Park, to 200th anniversary of the national anthem, do four Olympics.
Yeah, when they're on the side, just doing, you know, movies like The Patriot and Memoirs of a Geisha and just things that he's just relatively interested in.
He's also the most decorated composer, and like, in all honesty, one of the most decorated creators in Hollywood in general. So he's been nominated for a whopping 51 Academy Awards, 6 Emmys, 25 Golden Globes, 67 Grammys, and 15 BAFTAs. He won 3 out of 6 of those Emmys, and his one of his first major studio films, Valley of the Dolls, was his first nomination. And he actually is the most nominated person alive, but he is the second most, he is the person with the second most nominations ever, because Walt Disney had 59.
That seems unfair.
Yeah.
Get this man more nominations than Walt Disney so he can take that throne, please.
And when it comes to scoring film, John Williams is like, honestly, when you look at what he's won 5 Oscars, 7 British Academy Film Awards, and 22 Grammys. The 5 Oscars were for Fiddler on the Roof, Jaws, Star Wars, I believe it was New Hope, E.T., and Schindler's List. And so I just compiled a kind of short list of just the stuff that, like, we would really know. But this is a lot, so if one of you wants to recite this list.
I feel like Matt would be the best because he'd go through it quickly. I would stop and be like, man, I love that score.
Okay, I can do this. Nominating would be for Towering Inferno, Jaws, Star Wars, Close Encounters of the Third Kind, Superman, The Empire Strikes Back, Raiders of the Lost Ark, E.T., Return of Jedi, Indiana Jones and Temple of Doom, Empire of the Sun, The Witches of Eastwick, Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Home Alone, really? Hook, Schindler's List, Sleepers, Armstead, Saving Private Ryan, The Patriot, AI, Artificial Intelligence, that movie is so terrible. Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, Catch Me If You Can. Harry Potter and the Prisoner, Memoirs of Geisha, Munich. The Adventures of Tintin, Warhorse, Lincoln, The Book Thief, and Star Wars The Force Awakens, and Star Wars I will not name. And that's it.
The Last Jedi.
I like how he was like Harry Potter and the Prisoner.
Not even going to try to finish that one.
Prisoner of Azkaban, you fool.
Azkaban.
Yeah, that's a wide range, man. I know we said it, but that's just such a wide range of all of them. Movies.
These are just the ones that I was like, we probably know this movie.
Yeah.
There are more that he was nominated for Oscars. This is just some of them. And, like, if you look at it, like, he's scored, like, some of the most genre-defining films and some of the most drama-heavy films. Like, he's everywhere.
Who's the closest? Like, who's next?
After him? I don't know.
You're talking about, like overall, or you're talking about, like, as far as a composer?
I'm talking about as a composer.
Far as, like, for what? Just nominations in general?
Yeah, it's, like, nominations, like, decorated-wise.
Oh gosh! It basically Thomas Newman.
What did he do?
Bridge of Spies, Saving Mr. Banks, Skyfall, Wall-E, The Good German, Finding Nemo, Road to Perdition, American Beauty, Unsung Heroes, Little Women, Shawshank Redemption, Lemony Snickers.
So how many does he have? Because like he's not even on this top 25 list from the AFI's.
This is just most Oscar nominated composers. So I don't know if we need to count everything.
Well, this wiki, it shows he has 14 nominations.
I got 12.
John Williams has 51.
I have 36 for John Williams on Oscar nominations. I have 12 for Thomas Newman on this one. This is IMDb. And then...
Okay. Yeah. That, no, everything... What I read on biography.com in the Encyclopedia Britannica said 51 nominations.
So let's see. This list is only from like 2015, by the way.
Yeah. Well, this list has Bridge of Spies and Passengers, which would probably give us the other two that.
Oh, so this might have. So the other thing is too is he's also been nominated for Best Original Song. So like he had Best Score and Best.
Ooh, and Original Score. Yeah, you're right.
And Original Song, and that's what made up his 51.
Okay, this is Oscar nominations. What is this?
Dude, so many of these are just for original score. That's insane.
Well, I think the one I had was literally just all original score only. Yeah, this was only counting their nominations in score category. That was just it. So counting score category, he's got 36, Thomas Newman 12, Jerry Goldsmith 10, Hans Zimmer 10, Alexander Desplat.
Yeah, that's the person who did
the Grand Budapest Hotel. Budapest.
Yeah.
Hotel. Okay. Yeah.
That's the Shape of Water person.
And then I just looked this up. This article is from January 2018, and it says John Williams just broke his own record again. The legendary composer, whose latest accomplishment is a score for Star Wars The Last Jedi, has more Oscar nominations than any other living person. A title he first earned in 2016 with his 50th nomination, and on Tuesday morning, the musical genius earned his 51st.
So according to this one, most nominated, I got John Williams with 64, John Barry with 30. Well, this isn't even fucking order. What the dumbest shit is this? Oh, this goes by
wins.
And
that was from Vanity Fair. I quoted Vanity Fair. I don't want to say that I was taking their stuff.
So this one basically goes by wins. So it had John Williams with 47 wins. This is Academy Awards, it looks like. Wait, what is this? No, this is just wins overall. Yeah, so this one, John Williams has 64 nominations, 47 awards. Or 47 wins. John Barry, 31 nominations, 12 awards. James Horner, 37 nominations, 10 awards. Hans Zimmer, 38 nominations, 8 awards. Howard Shore, which, by the way, is also fantastic, especially considering he does, I think, a lot of the gaming stuff, too. 25 nominations, 8 awards. Poor Jerry Goldsmith, who actually has 43 nominations and only 6 awards.
He's like Martin Scorsese.
That's what I'm saying. He actually has, like, I think one of the, like, the second most nominations, but he had more.
I don't know if it's still like that, but I remember for the longest time, like, Martin Scorsese was one of the most, he was the most nominated director to not win.
And this list is obviously dated as well.
But yeah. So anyway, he has a lot of shit, and the next person is not close to him.
Yeah, it's like not even close. Like on any like other categories.
The next person would have to live another life.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of that, too, is just, like, he was really good friends with a fantastic director, and that fantastic director was a really good friends with a fantastic composer. And I think that's why he was able to, like, not that he wouldn't have done it without Steven Spielberg, but the fact that he was on 28 Spielberg movies probably helps that number a lot.
Yeah, I mean, he's almost 30 years older than Hans Zimmer and Alexander Desplat, who seem to be the closest on that list. Yeah. So he has, you know, almost three decades of composing and work in this realm. And he might have just gotten into, like, L.A. before,
everybody was in L.A.
Yeah. Basically, he got there at the right time and then just happened to be just one of the most amazing composers ever.
Yeah. So, I don't know. He's awesome. I mean, like, I don't have too much after that except for the fact that the American Film Institute, AFI, they gave the Lifetime Achievement Award to him. So in the 44 years that this award has been given out, it has never been given to a composer. But he got it. And it was presented to him by Steven Spielberg.
That makes sense.
Yeah, and he has three of his film scores are on AFI's top 100, or top 25 for the last 100 years of film. I think we went over this, I think, in our Jurassic Park episode, but he is the number one slot with Star Wars, and the number six slot with Jaws, and the number 14th spot with E.T.
Yeah, I mean, three of his wins for Academy Awards right there.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's all I had, really. This is a really short episode. But, I mean, outside of music, man, like, I don't know what else to say. Like, he changed the face of what it means to make a film soundtrack. I think he really raised the bar for everything that we hear. I mean, we were just comparing, like, people who've taken up franchises after he's left them. It's just a hole you can't fill.
Yeah, and it's, like, kind of hard to, like, put into a quantifiable terms of, like, how much his music affects people when they listen to it, right? Like, I'll probably watch a lot of these I'll listen to the soundtrack of these movies probably more in my lifetime than I will watch the movies.
Yeah.
Because the soundtracks are so good. Not that I don't like the movies, and maybe it might go to Matt's point of, like, maybe these movies just aren't as good without, like, the scores, the more I think about it. Like,
I'm telling you need to watch the Jaws thing. The Jaws thing is really bad.
I can't even imagine, to be honest.
It is really bad.
I can't even imagine. But it's just kind of hard to put into quantifiable words, like, how something makes you feel when it comes to music. Like, I think the biggest quantifiable thing that we've talked about here is that, like, just nobody is close to him when it comes to being recognized about how good his original scores are. Like, these original scores are just all over the place. And he might not have won every year, but, like, he's just been consistently nominated since the 60s. Like, that's just crazy.
Well, which kind of leads to what you were saying, though, he also has a 30-year head start. So the real question is, do you think any of these people are actually going to catch him?
So in 30 years, we'll reconvene?
Yeah,
well,
right.
Realistically, do you think anybody has a shot to come close?
I don't think so, man. I don't know.
Because this is about, like, this is almost a 60-year career, which means that these people halfway through their careers would have to be at least halfway to his numbers, and they're not.
But there are two variables you're forgetting, though. Once he leaves, your competition depletes.
Well, I don't even think it's really that. I think the big thing here is that he's part of three of the longest-running franchises ever.
Right.
I don't know if anyone else is going to have that unless something crazily culturally significant happens in the next 10 to 15 years, which the way Hollywood goes, I don't think we're going anywhere close to that.
We're just going to reboot after reboot. So.
Yeah. I guess I was just saying, like, for all the wins that he might win, you know, like, say he retires in, like, 5-10 years, like, now you have a 20-year stretch where you're not competing against John Williams. So all those possible runner-ups, you're not getting runner-up anymore.
Yeah, so I'm not even just talking wins. I'm just talking nominations.
Yeah, because he hasn't won since Schindler's List in 93.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's fine, too. But, I mean, even, like I said, nominations, there's only three nominations per award these days, or four?
It's five.
Oh, is it five?
Mm-hmm.
It's not five. Not for all composers?
Not for all categories, but I'm pretty sure the scores and original songs have more than three.
So 2017 original score had The Shape of Water, Dunkirk, The Phantom Thread, The Last Jedi, and Three Billboards. So 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah, 5.
Yeah, now I know the smaller ones are the effects categories where they're like 3.
Yeah. Well, I guess you also go, did they always have 5 or there's only 3 beforehand?
It's a good question. I don't know.
Because that could also play a part of like in the 60s and 70s, you only had to beat 2 people, now you got to beat 4.
Yeah. And if, I mean, like, you're like, I hate to bring up the acing again, but like, he was being nominated for Academy Awards while Hans Zimmer was 10.
Oh, yeah. Like, well, that's why I'm asking, like, obviously we know he's going to be setting all these things, but so, since the people have 30 years, do you think anybody could come relatively close in 30
years?
Hey,
Matt.
What?
In 1937, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. There were 14 nominations.
He was 8.
I know, yeah, but but I'm just saying, like, it. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's fine. I was just wondering because I don't follow award shows. I think they're
crazy, yeah. So that's why. Well, I mean,
yeah, no,
when
it
he
fluctuates greatly.
Yeah, when
so,
he
like,
won,
you'll have it looks like 4 is the average.
Okay.
Yeah.
But
that's
it
what I'm
goes.
Seeing.
It hasn't been 3 since like the 30s. I was right.
I mean, that's fine. I don't. I told you I don't care about award shows.
But to your point, Matt, no, I don't think anyone catches him. In like our lifetime, like if I don't think so. He's just too far ahead. He's just so far ahead.
Cause that's always a fun thing, seeing like how it catches and what happens.
It's like Wilt Chamberlain's like 100-point game. Like that's never gonna happen.
Well, I think the better relevance would be all of Jerry Rice's records.
Yeah,
quite honestly, because like you look at that and you're like, people are passing the ball so much these days, and yet he holds records that are like not even relatively close to anybody. Yeah, there's just a few things that, like, I'm just wondering.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just don't think anybody's going to catch him.
I mean, that's fine. I was just asking.
I also think a lot of it has to do with as much as it's, like, just, like, availability to work on these films. Like, just looking at, like, the amount that he produces in a year, or he was producing in a year in his prime, like, he was working on 4 or 5 movies.
Well, I mean, that's fine. Like, I mean, that's the same thing with athletics.
This man's a workhorse.
People used to be workhorses back in the day. Now you can do like 2 things and you're like dying. That's why they make you.
He did get nominated for The Adventures of Tintin and War Horse in the same year. And yeah, like he has a few of these years where he was nominated. In 1995, he was nominated for Nixon, Sabrina, and Moonlight from Sabrina. Like, he was like, he had 3 nominations.
So you have a 60% chance to win this?
Yeah.
That dude's just
he didn't win
it.
That year. but yeah. So I guess just like final thoughts. I mean, I'll go first in saying that like I really want whatever you're doing right now, I guess if you're not in the car and driving, but whatever you're doing, like go onto YouTube and watch him actually conducting your favorite theme that he's done. It is amazing to see because it's different from hearing it and then like seeing it and making that connection that these are this is like a 100-person orchestra. That's probably exaggerating, probably like a 50-person orchestra making this music that you listen to, and you may not like think of all the moving pieces, but there's so much that goes into it. So I really recommend watching some YouTube videos of that because it's amazing. And then just like watching him conduct, there's just so much passion in what he's doing.
One, obviously, if you want to watch John Williams, go to YouTube. One, I don't like YouTube, so we'll not do that. But I think you should go further as far as I love classical music. I think you should just go to watch anybody conduct. Obviously, John Williams would probably perfect it. But just watching any type of orchestra or symphony be composed is a really great thing to watch. And honestly, listening to classic music is great. At least scenes that I can remember as far as going to classical music would be, I believe it's Keanu Reeves when he does, I would recommend, like, one of the scenes that I, like, enjoy is from, obviously the movie Terrible, but that's a reboot with Keanu Reeves, The Day the World Stood Still, in which Keanu Reeves and I guess the person goes and they go to meet one of the smartest men in physics at his house. He's alone in the cabin woods. And he's doing basically physics and listening to classical music. And basically the intelligence is like, this music is like beautiful and it feels great and, you know, vibrant and everything. And he's like, yeah, it just makes me feel good to do all this stuff. And it just, it's a weird scene, but the whole point of the thing is, like, classical music does a lot for people, and even the brain activity, as they've done in studies. And so I totally recommend listening to it in general. There's a reason smart people listen to classical music a lot. I did a lot of math and coding to it.
Yeah, for me, I don't know. I just want to go listen to my my playlist of John Williams scores, like John Williams' greatest hits, just because he's just so good. I just think the scope of what he was able to do, regardless of, like, because he's old or whatever the case may be, like, you can be around for a long time, but your ability to do a wide range of music, I think, is, like, the biggest thing that I don't know if he gets near enough credit for. I mean, obviously, he's going to get credit for, like, the big Jaws and Star Wars, Indiana Jones, but it's those little ones, man, that, like, I didn't know that he did that blew me away when I'm looking through Kate's notes. Like, it's just, no one just comes close. He's like, the greatest composer, movie composer, TV composer, currently living, and probably will ever be, in terms, if you look at the nomination thing is concerned, and the fact that he won that the American Film Institute Award, and he's the only composer to do it in the 44-year history of the award, I think really shows that. And I agree with Matt, classical music is awesome, and I can't think of any other composer that does classical music in the way that John Williams does it in his range.
Wait, we haven't had this in a while. All three of us agree.
I know, so it's a classical. It's a fact.
Yep, it's a fact that classical music is great. Anyway, fun fact is that the Jaws theme is made with a tuba, and when he first played it with just the tuba sounds to Steven Spielberg, he thought it was a joke. And then John Williams was just like, nah, it's gotta be good. And then he put everything else in, and now it's one of the most iconic things ever.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I didn't know that, and now it just makes, like, that scene even funnier.
It's a tuba.
Big Jaws.
Thanks, John, yeah. For getting a ton of sharks murdered.
Oof.
Anyway, oof. As always, if you want to join the conversation, follow us on all of our social media at BoWhyThePC, and make sure you rate, review, and subscribe to us on iTunes. It is the easiest way to help us out and support us. Yeah. And you can find me at OhMyMythRandier on Twitter. Adrian?
Yep, you can find me on Twitter at SuperReese93, SuperReuiz93.
Matt?
I'm going to be floating off like that little artificial intelligence dude to John Williams. And if you've ever seen that movie, you know exactly what I'm talking about.
Yep. That's it. Bye.